You were listening to Romance by Watson and Edge, the album of Tears of Joy. Usually there's a connection to our music, to our guest, but I just played that one because I liked it. On that same album is a title cut called Wilson's Wild. I didn't like that cut, although it fits our guest. That's Dr. Dennis Wilson. He's been a bit on the maverick side of medicine in the past, and now his progressive ideas about thyroid are getting more acceptance. We're going to talk to him in just a few minutes. I'm Sherry Edwards, and this is VBS Radio. The show is Sound Health, and I appreciate the fact that you've joined us for some information and have the courage to learn about new things, on-the-edge things that VBS Radio brings you. I do have a few announcements before we get to our guests. We will be taking calls tonight. This is an audience participation show. Toll free, 877-876-5227. And in Canada, 888-810-8322. Direct line, 530-876-3222. And Don has posted a lot more numbers on the BBS homepage. And if I was to repeat all of them, we'd be here most of the evening. So if you didn't get that number, and just go to BBS, Boy Sam, BBSradio.com, choose a number and give us a call. We will also be monitoring Sound Health at soundhealth.org, as usual, and radio at vocalprofiling.com. We know some of you use your telephone to connect, so we're giving you a way to send us an email and a question. A lot of our guests like that. A lot of our listeners like that. A second announcement, a very important, exciting announcement. There's a new show going on. This show, Sound Health, started from an invitation from Don after I appeared on another show on BBS. We started out exploring the research that we were doing at Sound Health Research with sound and its effect on living systems. And occasionally I'd throw in a bit of my own philosophy. But mostly there were so many good people who had useful messages that this show began to be mostly interviews with other people, great people. So Don and I cooked up an idea. We're going to do an additional show that's just about sound and vocal codes and vocal profiling, all that stuff you've been hearing about in bits and pieces for the last year as we've been talking about other people. And in addition, we're going to make this an audience participation show. We're going to make it so you can watch what we're doing when we take your vocal sample. Watch how we move it through the steps to do an evaluation. And to give you back a complete printout almost instantaneously that we're just going to shoot to you via email right while we're on the show. We were going to do this last week, but technical difficulties made it impossible. So this week, tomorrow, in fact, Monday evening, we're going to go on the air. Technical difficulties or not, we may be able to do a full streaming by tomorrow evening, but that doesn't look absolute. So we've got an alternative, and we're going to go on. So call us. It's Vocal Profiling Live. You call in. We take a sample of your voice. We analyze it and provide you feedback. Each report that we do will be a specific topic based on emotions or personality or a question about, do I stay in this job? Do I take another one? Do I go with this guy? What do I decide about my life? In addition, we have templates that we can use, and we need to know what you're looking for. Like if you were looking for a thyroid problem, we would need to know that ahead of time so we could build the template. And I have built that template so we can look at that. In case some of you think this vocal profiling stuff is a far-fetched idea, you can go to our website and look at it, Nutra, N-U-T-R-A, Sounds, plural, NutriSounds.com, or the Journal of Bioacoustic Biology's site. That's jbab.org. That's our research site, justicebadappleboy.org. And our work has been published in peer-reviewed journals, Journal of Bioinformatics, the Acoustic Society of America. We're listed in the Duke Encyclopedia of Alternative Medicine and Scientific Basis for Alternative Medicine. Pfizer Pharmaceuticals followed in our footsteps about vocal profiling. They published an article in, I think it was, the Journal of Neurolinguistics. So we're getting some notoriety, and we're just going to have fun with it on the show. So I invite you for Monday, tomorrow, 5:30 Pacific, 8:30 Eastern. Go to BBS Radio, click on BBS Late Night, go down to the schedule, click on Vocal Profiling Live, and we'll share some information. If you want more information about how to do this and how to be a guest so we can do your voice, go to NutriSounds.com, or you can call the office at 740-698-9119, or email Heather, that's H-E-A-T-H-E-R, at vocalprofiling.com. You can also do radio at Vocal Profiling if you want. I'll get those personally. And the tagline we're using is, we're going to answer questions that you didn't know need to be asked. So we've been doing this a long time with people just on the telephone. We're going to take it to the airwaves. Okay, one last announcement here. I've posted several new articles on Question the Experts on the BBS Question the Experts section, one on power trips, one another new frequency report for the week that deals with detoxification, and another one that a listener asked, do you think we create our own reality? I did a takeoff with Beyond the Self, the new movie, The Self. Okay, boy, that was a lot. But there's a lot of great things happening, and we want to get Dr. Wilson on. He is the author of The Wilson Syndrome, The Miracle of Feeling Well. And boy, is that the truth, because his book changed my life several years ago. I want to tell you before we start that Dr. Wilson has been changing lives for a long time. And in my own case, it turned my life around so dramatically that I've given this book to several of my friends, and they also love it. But I'm going to talk about this from a personal perspective and then ask Dr. Wilson some very hard questions. I would like to invite you to send in your own questions as well. Dr. Wilson, welcome to the show, and thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Thank you very much, Sherry. It's a pleasure being with you tonight.
Your book is in its third edition. That makes it a very important book. Why did you write Wilson Syndrome, The Miracle of Feeling Well?
Well, there are so many people that are suffering from problems that are very common, very debilitating, and they don't always show up on blood tests, and people are told that they're fine or that there's nothing wrong with them, when actually they're quite debilitated, and many of them respond very dramatically to treatment.
Well, you'll find lots of people on this particular show, or our listeners for this show, that doctors have told them they're crazy a lot of the times that they go to see them. This is about thyroid and low temperature. Am I making that too simple?
No, I agree with that. In fact, we could almost say this is about temperature. We do use different modalities to try to address the temperature, one of them being thyroid, because that's what the body uses to address temperature, and so we do use that as a tool. However, the blood tests, the thyroid blood tests, are frequently normal, and or in this particular condition we're looking at here, that's one of the characteristics, is that the thyroid blood tests are normal, but these people still, see, if a person has low thyroid function, they can have a low body temperature and they can have the symptoms that go along with it. However, there's some people that have normal thyroid function, that their body temperatures are still low, and you can still have all the symptoms of low thyroid function, even though your thyroid function is normal, because it's coming from the same problem, and that being a low temperature. And another way of approaching that also is with herbs. Certain herbs can improve your body temperature patterns.
On my thyroid test, it says the test isn't reliable anyway, so why do it?
Right.
Did I just hear you laugh there?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It really is a study, a very interesting study and tradition, I guess, to see, because a lot of times doctors, I mean, I don't know how in the particular area of thyroid problems that doctors became so believing that they are very useful, because, I mean, no one does a blood test to see if somebody has depression or has migraines. They don't do blood tests with that. But for some reason, doctors have come to trust and believe that you can tell what someone's metabolism is like by looking at their blood tests. And sometimes it's led to the point where doctors will ask me, or patients will ask me, or doctors will ask me, you know, why doesn't this show up on blood tests? And sometimes my question is, why would we expect it to?
Well, I know with my own.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. with my own symptoms, I couldn't swallow well. I was swallowing and it felt like it was moving over to the side and there was a clicking. So I went to my doctor and he said, "Oh, well, you're just too fat, so you're just feeling guilty about eating." So 3 or 4 days go on and then it starts, I can't breathe. And I'm having to hold my head at a certain angle to even breathe right. And I go back and I said, okay, swallowing food might make you fat, but breathing air does not make you fat. Humor me. Do something. So he did this blood test, and everything was normal. I said, humor me. Give me some thyroid, because I had read your book, and I was getting pretty pushy about it, to see what was really going on. Because there were times, and I was in school at the time, and I was a mother with 3 kids, and this particular school had really high ceilings. There were 17 steps, you know, from one floor to the other. And there were days when I would look at those steps, and it would just be agony to get up them. If I'd have had it, I'd have paid somebody $1,000 to carry me up those steps. It was just awful. And then the doctor told me it's all in my head. But just with, I think he started me on Synthroid. Within a few days, I had some more energy, but that was just not at all the whole symptom, the whole list of symptoms that was going on. And yes, I began to breathe better, and he said, well, I guess that's it. You know, I feel like I'm a guinea pig here, and I talk to a lot of women who have the same kind of idea. So the symptoms that people experience, especially some of the people who end up at our clinic, a lot of sleep problems. They just can't stay asleep once they get asleep. What are some of the other symptoms that people might be experiencing when this happens to them?
Yes, insomnia is very common, and fatigue, like you mentioned, is very common. Headaches and migraines, irritability, fluid retention, anxiety, and panic attacks. Some people actually have panic attacks. They can have hair loss, depression, decreased memory and concentration, low sex drive, unhealthy nails, low motivation and ambition, constipation, easy weight gain, irritable bowel syndrome. They can get dry skin and dry hair, insomnia, hives, asthma, allergies. And I know it sounds like, and that's just the short list. I mean, it can affect a lot of people a lot of different ways, but what we're basically talking about is we're talking about metabolism, and metabolism is the all the chemical reactions that take place in the body, and all of our chemical, all of the functions in our body depend on chemical reactions, and most all of those chemical reactions depend on enzyme function, and those enzymes depend on temperature for their conformation or for how well they work. And so basically, when a person's temperature drops, almost it can affect almost any aspect of their bodily function. And the three that I really love about the three symptoms that I really like to treat is panic attacks and anxiety, migraines, and PMS. And the reason why those are my favorite is because they're so debilitating and they respond so well to normalizing a body temperature, and there's frequently so little else that can be done for these people. So normally, you know, you're just going to suffer for your life, but if you get your temperature up, then there's a good chance that you could feel dramatically better in no time.
We've had some people in the clinic here, menopausal women, that have really, really heavy, long periods. And you look at their vocal print, and you can see the thyroid issues. You send them back to the doctor that referred them and say, this is thyroid. And just in a month or so, their periods are regulated. Why don't doctors know about this? It's such a simple fix. Well, at least at that point it was.
Yes, it is a very simple fix, and it is a good question why doctors don't know about it, and there's probably a lot of answers to that question, but I'm going to lean towards saying it has mostly to do with tradition and how the thyroid, the area of thyroid treatment and diagnosis has kind of evolved over the last 60 or 70 years. Before the blood test, once upon a time, doctors couldn't really diagnose hypothyroidism in any other way than by looking at a person. But once upon a time, the blood tests were developed, and then doctors were able to use that to diagnose hypothyroidism, which is just one particular problem that can go wrong. And then they began to believe that meant that they could diagnose everything that goes on with the metabolism with the blood test. And I think that's where we've gone wrong. But even so, you never really know. It's my feeling that you really never know how well a patient is doing, or you can't really be totally sure what's wrong with a patient until you can help that patient get better. And until you take a sick person and you help them recover completely, then you can't really know for sure that you know what you're talking about. And so what I mean by that is, even if you have a blood test that says such and such and so, that doesn't necessarily, doesn't really do much for you unless you can use that information to help a patient recover. And so what I'm saying is, in the final analysis, the best indicator for diagnosis and management of a health problem is whether or not the person recovers, because that's really the bottom line. And so I know it's kind of a longer answer than I wanted to give, but basically, until you see these people get better with treatment, then you may not even know the problem exists, because that's even the way it is with patients. Lots of patients I've had will treat them and they'll get better, and then they'll say, now I know what it feels like. I thought I was sick. Now I remember what it feels like to be 20 years old. Now I remember what it feels like to be normal. I know I felt like this once upon a time, but I thought I was just getting older. And now I know what it feels like to be normal again. So even a patient, really, they think they know what it's, they think they know how sick they are, but nobody really knows, you know, what the deal is until they recover.
So you can't argue with the results.
Right.
I got kind of a complicated question here. Is the temperature thing only involved with thyroid, or is there other, like the kidneys and other things involved? Is this a thyroid disease? What's the difference in a disease and a syndrome? Because this is called Wilson syndrome, after you, of course.
Yes, that's a good question. And a syndrome is a collection of symptoms that occur together in a predictable way. And a disease is normally a pathophysiological mechanism, meaning a disease is something like if somebody has, like Addison's disease, there's a particular deficiency in adrenal hormone, and so that's the problem. You know what the problem is, and there's a particular problem, and you say, okay, that person has Addison's disease, they have that problem. But when you don't have like a pinpoint problem, but you have a recognizable set of symptoms, then you say, you know, we don't really necessarily know exactly what the problem is, but these symptoms go together and they go away together. They come together and they go the way they go away together. This is how they present. They present under periods of stress, and it's more likely in these people and those people, and this is how they respond. But you do that even if you don't necessarily know exactly what the disease process is. And so to answer your question about is it just thyroid, the truth is we don't really know exactly what causes. I mean, we have some ideas. We have some reasons to think certain things about it. We believe that when people go through stress, their bodies tend to conserve energy, and they go into conservation mode, and that's normal. But they're supposed to come back out of conservation mode, and sometimes they don't, and they stay suppressed or depressed. But why is it more common now? We think it's more common now, but why is it more common now than it was before? Is there something we're not getting in our diets? Is there some toxins that are in the environment that weren't in the environment before? Is it, and it can be, any disease process pretty much can contribute to this problem, because basically when you're starting to get sick or starting to get stressed, you know, any health problem can cause stress, and that stress can cause your body to start to shut down and go into conservation mode, and when your temperature drops, then you can get the symptoms. And so you're right, it could be, it doesn't have to necessarily be thyroid per se, it could be a host of many different problems.
So you talk in your book a lot about stress. Is there other things like toxicity? Is that involved?
It can be. I consider that a form of stress, and certainly when people have a toxic load of heavy metals, there are some people that have toxicity and with heavy metals or something else, and if they avoid the chemicals, or especially if they get the chemicals or the heavy metals removed, there are some people that we've seen whose temperatures go up. Their temperatures are depressed, and then when they get some of the treatment, chelation treatments to remove some of their heavy metals, then their temperatures can come up just from that. So so those people don't even. And sometimes people that aren't responding well to thyroid medicine or to herbs, aren't responding well because they do have a toxic load.
We have an email from Doris. It's a comment rather than a question. She said, used to be when I would sleep, I would get very cold. I used lots of blankets, eventually sleeping with a heating pad. After I read your book, I checked my morning temperature. It was 94. Now I have a new life. And a new energy, and a new life full of energy. Thank you, Dr. Wilson. That's pretty great.
Yeah, that's thrilling.
Is that the same kind of thing you see over and over again with your people?
Yes, it is so. It's amazing what night and day can happen to people's it's amazing what an influence a body temperature can have on a person's life, because whether it's being comfortable in a room where normally you'd be freezing, that's a huge thing. I remember this one woman, whether it's more comfortable in driving situations. I remember one woman had a low temperature, and she had panic. She was panicking, and she was fearful. And the way it feels, a low temperature often feels to people, is they feel like they're overwhelmed or at the end of their ropes. And pretty much that's the way they are physiologically. Their body is saying, you know, resources are down. And so she had the problem of going too slow on the interstate, and she was getting tickets for traveling too slow when she was driving. And the way she knew that her temperature was going up and she was feeling a lot better, she started getting speeding tickets for going 85 miles an hour.
That's good.
And she did not even know that she was traveling fast. Before, I mean, same thing with going over bridges and so on. Before, I mean, she had no problem going 85 miles an hour. And it just snuck up on her, and then all she saw was blue lights after that.
There's some incredible stories in your book, too. We've talked about stress. We talked about heavy metals. You talk in your book about people with American Indian and Irish heritage, so there's genetics here. We've talked about a little bit about diet. So if somebody was to come to your clinic, would you test them on all of those parameters? What would they experience if they came to see you?
The first thing, one thing I like to do is, what I like to suggest is to see if you're on the right track. Certainly, anything a person can do is, anything a person can do to reduce their stress is a great idea. They can, there's all kinds of lifestyle things they can do. They can exercise, they can eat right. Sometimes just diet and exercise is enough for somebody to get their health back and get their temperature up and for them to start feeling a lot better. Avoiding debt and, all the spiritual things that people can do to avoid stress and things. And so, but if all that fails, then there's plants that people can try. There's which I think is a really neat approach or possibility, because I'm seeing as believing, like we were talking about before. And I've been amazed, and I wasn't, when I went to allopathic medical school to be an MD, they didn't really teach us a lot about herbs or plants, and so I didn't really see very much about that. But since then, I've seen people take plants and recover. You know, they start eating certain plants and they recover, and it's amazing to me. But then it makes sense, because plants and animals have gone together for all time. You know, plants and animals do go together, and if you separate plants, animals from plants, then it makes sense that you could very well have some problems. And then, but anyway, as far as, so yes, you could test all those things. You could test straight blood tests, looking for, normal, typical medical problems like kidney disease or liver disease, or just any kind of basic health evaluation, looking for any kind of problem. But so often, after, you know, all the king's horses and all the king's men do all the king's tests and find nothing wrong with people, and yet they still have all the symptoms. And that's when we really start thinking, well, why don't you check your temperature and see if it's low? And so we have them check their temperature, and the way you do that is with an oral thermometer. And we prefer liquid metal thermometers, and they can... They're kind of hard to come by. Some pharmacies have them. Some Walmart sometimes carries them, and if you have trouble finding them, you can find them on our website. But the when they can measure their temperature, we recommend they take their temperature 3 times a day, every 3 hours, starting about 3 hours after they wake up. So if they wake up at 7, they could take their temperature at 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 4 o'clock, and then they could average those temperatures together and see if it runs less than 98.6. And so one thing that they can do is, if it does show that their temperature is running low, then it's a simple thing to do to try some treatments to get the temperature up, just as a try and see, just to see how is this person going to feel when the temperature is closer to normal. And that's what I like, is that it doesn't take long to see if you're on the right track. It's something easy they can try, and then all of a sudden, if they notice that all the problems that have been slowly coming on them start to quickly go away, then that's where the hope kicks in, and that's when, we can feel good about being on the right track, and that's when you can address all kinds of, everything you can find. So, there's different doctors that look for different things, but, anything we can find in a person's health that we can correct, that's what we do.
You mentioned your website. Would you give that out?
Yes. There's a long version. The long version is Wilson's with an S, Wilson's Temperature Syndrome, .com, or .org or net, they're all the same. And then another one you could use is, the short version is WTSMed.com.
WTSMed?
Yes, med is in medicine.
Medicine, okay. Would you prefer that people go through the website, or can they call your office?
Yeah, the best thing to do is to go through the website, because the middle tab on the website is a tab of treating physicians, and that lists all the doctors that are trained in this kind of medical approach.
Are they all over the U.S. and the world?
Yes, they're all over the U.S. The truth is that there's 10 or 20 times more doctors that are doing it than are on our website, probably maybe more than that. But the thing is that we don't list all of those doctors, because we find that some doctors are more enthusiastic about the protocols that we recommend than others. And so the ones that are on our website are the ones that some of them have attended our training conferences and have gotten certified in the treatment, and others have demonstrated more enthusiasm. Because one thing that's really disappointing is, if we listed all the doctors, some of the patients were going to doctors, and the doctors said that they were interested in it, but when the patients got there, they discovered that the doctors weren't so interested in it, and that's very frustrating. So we've reduced the list to doctors where patients aren't going to complain.
So the very active ones. Are these doctors still getting flack from the medical profession about this?
Not so much. I don't really think. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's there's so much more inroads now. I mean, one of the things that we have now is this: we've established this particular treatment as a standard of care medicine, and we've done that by a legal process where we've obtained a consensus statement among like-minded physicians, and we have signatures of doctors on this consensus statement, and it turns out that actually has a legal value. So once you reach a critical mass of a certain number of like-minded physicians, then that makes the treatment standard of care. But that doesn't mean that. So, and we have that, and so they have a legal standing for what they do. However, that doesn't mean that every doctor in the world agrees with this, because they don't. And like I said, unless you've seen it, you really have a hard time believing it, especially if you learn something totally different in medical school.
Or unless you've experienced it. I want to add that.
Yes.
I want to make a comment, too, about, you know, you suggested exercise. When you're in this condition, it is hard just to keep going and put one foot in front of the other. So exercise was an issue for me.
Exactly.
There wasn't enough energy to do what I had to do. You talked about training. Do you train people other than MDs and DOs? And I mean, what kind of people can take your training?
We train anybody that is a licensed healthcare practitioner. Anybody that's licensed to treat patients can take our training, and that includes. So we do have MDs, DOs, MDs as in naturopathic doctors, chiropractors, nurse midwives, physician's assistants, nurse practitioners. We actually have about 30 different degrees represented by people who are affiliated with us or have taken some of our courses.
And
so
you have a clinic where you...
Acupuncture physicians, massage therapists, all kinds of people.
So you have a clinic and you practice also?
No.
Plus do this training?
No, I'm not practicing right now, and my main efforts are education, training, and support.
Okay. I have a question from our listening audience. What does weight gain and weight management really have to do with the thyroid and low temperatures?
Well, the temperature has everything to do with weight management, certainly. And people with low temperatures are going to find that a great obstacle to losing weight. And some people when they get their temperature up, they find that they're able to lose weight when they otherwise could not lose weight. And sometimes it can be very dramatic. And but I must say also that sometimes people get their temperatures up to normal and they're feeling a lot better, and they still can have trouble losing weight. And I have a theory as to why that might be also. But I can say that some people will lose. I remember one woman, this is probably the most dramatic case I ever saw. A woman came in and she was about 35 or 40 pounds overweight by her estimate. And we put her on treatment and we saw her about a month later. And a month later, she was truly unrecognizable. And in that month's time, she said she hadn't changed her diet at all. And in that month's time, she had lost 35 pounds. And she didn't look like the same person. And so it was just it was unbelievable. But that was the only time I ever saw it happen like that. But what it shows is that when a person's temperature goes to normal and their chemical processes start working, then it's like their metabolism is working 24 hours a day. And that can chew up a lot of weight very quickly. And I've seen people lose over 100 pounds before and over a period of time. And it makes you wonder, really, when you lose that much weight that fast, it makes you wonder. But if I was going to lose weight that fast, that would be the way I'd want to lose it. I wouldn't want to lose that much weight by starving. I would definitely want to lose that much weight by burning. But yeah, it's a very important factor in weight management for sure.
Okay, we have some questions coming in now from the audience. I've heard that foods like broccoli and cabbage inhibit the thyroid. Is there food that should be avoided?
Those foods that you mentioned are foods known to inhibit thyroid gland function, and I think it's okay to. Most people don't really have trouble with their thyroid glands, and so, you know, if you have a thyroid gland problem, then it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to avoid those things. But as a comparison, the people that we're talking about that have low temperatures and normal blood tests, if you take a lot of people with thyroid symptoms, thyroid-like symptoms, and see, there's a lot of people that are saying that hypothyroidism is very common. Well, if hypothyroidism is common, then Wilson syndrome is about 100 times more common than that. Because if you have a lot of people with low temperatures, if you took 100 people with low temperatures, about 98 or 99 of them would have normal blood tests and normal thyroid gland function, and many of those would still respond to herbs or thyroid treatment to normalize their body temperatures.
Okay, here's another question from Dina. I'm not sure you can answer it. How can I tell if I have low temperature, and if I do have low temperature, what is the right choice, medication, food, herbs, exercise, that would be the most helpful?
Okay, that's a good question, and we talked a little bit about how to measure the temperature before, and on our website, WTSmed.com, if you go to the first tab that says, identifying the problem. Under that first tab, identifying the problem, if you click on that, there's a menu item after that that says how are temperatures measured, and that describes how to measure the temperature, and that's we described that a little bit earlier in the show. And then, so that would be a way to, we have a temperature chart for free up on the website also that you can download and print out, and you can use that temperature chart to measure your temperature and chart it. And then once you determine if it's low, then you're right, you have some options. One option is non-treatment or non-medical treatment or non-herbal treatment, and that's just diet and exercise and lifestyle, so you might try that. But Sherry's totally right about so many people. One of the benefits of the treatments we use, we hear a lot of times is people say, you know, I'm feeling so much better, now I can exercise. And now I can do a lot of the things I'm supposed to do because I sure couldn't do it before. One's that treatment. Another option is some people want to try the herbs first because they would rather not take thyroid medicine if they don't have to. And other people they're tired of feeling sick and they want to try the thyroid medicine and not take the herbs if they don't have to. And then other people say, you know, I feel really bad, and I want to do everything I can to feel as well as I can, as fast as I can, so I'm going to take herbs and thyroid medicine. And that's a reasonable approach for some also. It's almost, a lot of this is try and see. And so you sort of have to decide which you want to try first. And I guess the advantage of herbs is that you don't need to see a doctor to try the herbs. You don't have to see a physician, and you can see if the herbs will help you. The herbs are typically a little bit more slower acting. In other words, you might feel better in 3 weeks. Some people feel better in a week or a few days, but normally it's more like a few weeks. And and they might help. You might get better and better over a period of months. And then, but the people that really have the most exclamatory results, the people that really talk about how they feel reincarnated, those are typically the patients that have tried the thyroid medicine. The thyroid medicine in certain people has the potential of raising their temperature sometimes in a matter of hours or days, and people can feel dramatically better in a very short period of time. And the downside, I guess, with the medicine, the T3 medicine, is that you do have to see a doctor. It does require a prescription. There is a greater chance of side effects, or there's a greater risk involved because it is a thyroid hormone and a strong one at that. It is harder to take the T3 medicine because it has to be done according to a very careful protocol to make it as safe as possible. So those are some of the parameters you use in trying to decide which you want to try first.
Well, you said temperature normal, 98.6. If somebody's 97, where are they? If somebody's 94, where are they? Is it?
When you say where are they, is it good to be 94 or?
Well, is 97 not very bad, but 94 go to the doctor immediately or?
Oh yes, I see. Yes, 94. The worse your temperature is, typically the worse you might feel or the worst situation you may be in. And I have seen people with 94 and 93. That's fairly amazing that people have temperatures that low. But typically, classically, people will tell you that their temperature is around 97.8. 98.6 is normal, but if someone's 97.8 or below, then that's a good indicator that they probably have a problem. And some people can be absolutely miserable, terribly sick, devastated at 97.8. You don't have to be 94 to be really sick. And in fact, I've actually had patients who were just as low as, not as many, but a small percentage of people can be as low as 98.2 or 98.4 even. And when their temperatures were raised just a few tenths of a degree up to 98.6, they felt better. So sometimes just a little bit of a low temperature is enough to make people feel really bad.
We have three more questions from the audience, and then I have one I want to ask. This is kind of a strange one. It's from somebody named Porta. What do you think of stomach stapling as a way to lose weight? I mean, that's totally off the subject, but
yes.
This person seems to be
it wouldn't be my first choice because I believe the human body is incredibly well designed and well built, and I think it's really very complicated, and I think that anything we can do to enhance or to encourage the body to function the way to function normally on its own, the way it was designed to function, without intervening too much, probably the better off we'll be. And but I don't think that I don't think it's totally out of the question. I think surgery is a good thing for some people in some circumstances, whether it's that kind of surgery or other kind of surgeries. I mean, there's some things that really, broken bones. I mean, my daughter had surgery for, a broken leg, and I think it was a really great thing, and I don't know where she'd be without it. But so anyway, I'm a fan of surgery in some cases, but I would certainly hope to avoid it if I could.
One of the things we find here when we take vocal samples and run people through our program is people who have had their stomach stapled are very depleted in nutrients, particularly the B's and iron. So
yeah,
I can see where people get really desperate. Okay, next question. This is also from the audience. I am cold all the time. My husband can be sweating, and I'm cold. He makes fun of me because the doctors say there is nothing wrong with me. Do you know of any articles that I can that I could rub in his face? I am so relieved to hear you talking about being cold as an illness. These must be on your site, right? Articles that
yes,
you could show
you can,
him?
You can, if you go to that middle tab, it's called, or actually from the on the front on the homepage, you can click on ebook, free ebook online, and the book that we mentioned earlier on. Oh, by the way, I guess I should mention that on our website is there's a patient book. There's a book that I wrote for patients.